Ninth Circuit is now in session. Please be seated.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is the time and place for oral argument on Arrowhead Capital Finance versus Picture Pro. I just want to thank Judge Kennelly for sitting with us, and he will be sitting with us for a couple more days this week. And from today, literally, the Northern District of Illinois. So thank you very much, Judge Kennelly. So let's take up argument. Mr. Stillman?
Good afternoon, Your Honors. I just wanted to thank you for making the accommodation for being here today. We have three issues here on this subpoena. The trial court erred in enforcing the unserved subpoena. There were two subpoenas here. One was not served, and there was no proof of service required by Rule 45. And the second was was issued after the court required that Arrowhead get leave of court to serve a third party subpoena, which it did, and it then served substantially the same subpoena. So putting all other things aside, there's no dispute that the first subpoena was not properly served, and there's no proof of service required by Rule 45b-4. And the second subpoena, there's no dispute that it was never served at all. It was served by mail, and it didn't have a place of compliance or a time for compliance. So that subpoena was defective. And so the court erred, the magistrate erred, and the district court erred in accepting that somehow the original subpoena, or the disputed subpoena, as we call it in the brief, could be somehow enforced, despite the fact that there was no finding by the New York court that it was enforceable. We filed a motion to quash that subpoena in a timely way, and argued that it wasn't properly served, and so the trial court erred as a matter of law in enforcing the wrong subpoena.
Mr. Stillman.
Yes.
Sorry to be speaking at you from a screen, but in your brief, there's a suggestion that the initial subpoena needed some sort of leave of court before it could be relied on. Is that an argument that you're making?
No, Your Honor. I think you might have misread it. What we said regarding the first subpoena, which I call the disputed subpoena, is that it was never properly served on Picture Pro. And when we filed a motion to quash on that, and then there was never a proof of service certified by the server filed with the court as required by Rule 45b-4. It's the second subpoena that was issued after the court made clear that to send out third party subpoenas, Arrowhead had to get leave of court to do so. And in fact, right after that order was issued, Arrowhead issued the same basic subpoena to Picture Pro that it had issued previously. The only thing to draw from that is that he knew that the first subpoena was not valid, because the court subsequently said, you need to obtain leave of court to send out third-party subpoenas.
And then the rules, though, that requires there to be leave of court before you serve a subpoena, right?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
There's nothing in the rules that requires you to get leave of court before you serve a subpoena, even if it's post-judgment, right?
No, not that I'm aware of. And certainly no. As far as I'm aware, that's not the case. However, the issue in the first one was the service issue, and that it's over breadth. And that's why we filed a motion to quash. Then the court said, no, wait a minute, I'm ordering you to get a leave in order to file to serve third party subpoenas. These are collection of judgment subpoenas. And that one is the one that was never served on us. That's why Picture Pro says that neither of those subpoenas are valid or effective and can be enforced by the miscellaneous proceeding.
So Picture Pro says that what I'm calling the first subpoena was served by hand on this fellow Hoffman at the registered office, which was his house out in Los Angeles. Is that not right?
That is not correct.
Okay.
So what did happen?
Service, apparently, what supposedly happened was that at some point there was a rain-soaked subpoena in the front yard of the building, and that's it. There was no in-hand service. There was no put it in the door. Nothing like that at all. And then when we demanded that we have that they provide service proof of that service as required by Rule 45B4, nothing was provided except a declaration from Mr. Golden, Arrowhead's counsel, saying that it was served in some fashion. But B4 was never complied with because the server never actually filed anything saying how it was served. So, and then when we got that, we then objected to the service by motion to quash. So, and that's why I believe that neither of the subpoenas can be enforced by the court. And so I want to touch briefly on the idea that, that Picture Pro waived its objections, because if it waived it, we filed, and I think the case law is cited in our brief very clear, Picture Pro filed a motion to quash. We challenged the subpoena. We challenged both of the subpoenas. So it doesn't seem that we need to do anything other than challenge those subpoenas, and yet the court continuously said we waived our objections by not objecting to it when we in fact did object to both subpoenas. I want to turn briefly, because I want to reserve a little bit of time, just to the issue of sanctions. Due process, opportunity to be heard, fundamental. And in this case, the Picture Pro did not get due process and opportunity to be heard. Inherent power sanctions were imposed upon Picture Pro by the district court, and the only notice was the tentative ruling, which was given to us the afternoon prior to the hearing, and then of course our argument to the court at that time. But that is not sufficient notice and opportunity to be heard. We're entitled to brief the issue. We're entitled to know what the sanctioning standard is that the court's going to impose upon us before the court decides to do so. So,
can I ask you about that? The magistrate judge's R&R, I think, did not rely on inherent powers or bad faith. It basically relied on Rule 37. But the argument that's made is that there's enough in there in the way of findings to have put you on notice that bad faith was an issue. What do you have to say about that?
I don't think that's accurate, Judge, because the standard applicable to Rule 37 sanctions is that it's not substantially justified, that the position's not substantially justified. Whereas the standard for inherent power sanctions, it's a very high standard, and it's used and has to be used sparingly, and it requires actual bad faith. And I submit to the court that there is no actual bad faith here. The either finding of actual bad faith or a reasonable argument that there was a bad faith by Picture Pro in how it dealt with this the subpoena in this very contentious issue that's been going on for a very, very long time in the New York courts. And with that, unless there are other courts have any questions, I'd like to reserve a little time.
All right. Thank you, counsel. Mr. Klapach?
Yes, may it please the court. Joseph Klapach for the appellee, Arrowhead Capital. Let me just address the two arguments that my opposing counsel has raised. First, the record fully supports the district court's finding, which would be reviewed for clearly erroneous evidence, whether it was clearly erroneous, the factual finding, that Picture Pro was personally served with the March 10, 2020 post-judgment subpoena. He says that it was never properly served, there was no proof of service filed. That is just false. The record contains a proof of service from a registered process server named Robert Hall, who personally served Peter Hoffman, the registered agent of Picture Pro, on March 10, 2020 at the Orange Drive residence in Los Angeles, California. That proof of service is located in the in this court's excerpts of record on volume 3 at page 416. It's also located in the lower court's docket at docket number 20-1 at page 1. It was before the court. The court was talking about it at the hearing, about this proof of service, saying, you know, what's this number here I'm seeing, 266-5 in the court's in the New York court's docket, which is where the Arrowhead was required to file the proof of service in the issuing court.
Mr. Klapich, sorry if I mispronounced your name. Mr. Stillman said something about dropping it on the front lawn. What is that, just wrong?
Well, that was their claim. Their claim was that it was dropped on the front lawn, but that was rejected by the court. The court made a finding that it was properly served based on the proof of service that's in the record. And that finding is reviewed for whether it's clearly erroneous, and that governs on appeal. That there's more than enough evidence here. And in fact, I would note that it wasn't just the district court that made this finding. It was also the magistrate that made this finding, and also the New York court made this finding. In fact, if you look in the court's, the New York court's February 5th, 2021 order, which is located in volume 2 of the excerpts of record at page 138, the New York court there states, quote, "The court concludes that the substance of plaintiff's subpoena to PPL, which is Picture Pro, and the manner of issuance and service comply with all the provisions of Rule 45. So we have
multiple so what's the evidence that supports the finding of the court that there was proper service?
The proof of service from a registered process server that states that it was served on Robert Hall. And not only that, but he provides a factual description of what he looks like. And that's at page, like I said, 416 of the excerpts of record and docket 20-1. And the court was presented with that from a registered process server, saying that I personally served this on the registered agent of process. That was also part of the record, that Mr. Hoffman was a registered agent of Picture Pro. That's at volume 2 of the excerpts of record at page 191-94. It's a business search showing the agent for service of process for Picture Pro in California.
Counsel, is it typical for such a description to be included in a process?
Oh, no, it's not usually done.
I was wondering about that. I've never seen this.
It was done in this case because there was substantial evidence that he was trying to duck service. And in fact, you can see there was efforts to do service of the petition in this case, where they went to his house on 7 different occasions. They couldn't find him. He was nowhere to be found. And so when they'd learned from all the prior litigation and all the prior problems that they'd had, when you can serve this guy, darn it, write it down. Jot all your cross all your T's and dot all your I's. And that's exactly what they did here. And the courts below and in New York looked at this and said, we believe it. We believe that this process server, Robert Hall, actually did the service on the date and time that he stated at the location that he stated. And that finding is subject to very deferential review on appeal.
Mr. Klapich, my main question for you has to do with the sanction. So to me, at least, it's pretty clear that the magistrate judge and the R&R didn't rely on the inherent powers. It was all about Rule 37. And so my question is, how... I mean, there are cases that basically say that there has to be advance notice, not just of the fact of seeking sanctions, but of the basis on which they're sought. So, how is there advance notice or sufficient notice of the fact that sanctions were being sought here or going to be ordered based on inherent powers and bad faith?
I think that's I would reframe the issue slightly in light of the Ninth Circuit's controlling authority on this issue. And I would refer the court to the Toombs case, T-O-O-M-B-S, at 777 F. 2nd, 465, and then the relevant discussion is at page 472. And what the court held there is that due process requires only that the parties subject to sanctions have, quote, sufficient opportunity to demonstrate that their conduct was not undertaken recklessly or willfully. And so the test in the Ninth Circuit is, did you have an opportunity to defend the conduct for which sanctions was being imposed? not, did you have notice of the very specific legal ground on which the trial court was going to impose sanctions.
So how was there notice or advance notice that there was going to be a need for a finding of recklessness or because that's not what Rule 13 is about.
I think there was advance notice here to PicturePro in multiple forms. First, you have the fact that the petition itself requests sanctions in the amount of roughly $12,000, and it describes some of the bad faith litigation conduct that PicturePro had engaged in prior to the service of the petition. Second, you then had the magistrate judge who conducted an actual hearing on the sanctions award, and the judge said, look, I'm thinking about awarding sanctions here, and I think that there was bad faith conduct here, and listed out some of the bad faith conduct that took place. And then PicturePro had an opportunity at that hearing, which is at docket number 13, to address that finding. The magistrate starts off the hearing at page 5 at docket number 13 of the transcript, saying, I'm inclined to award sanctions here. PicturePro has the opportunity to discuss it later on in the hearing, which it does.
So you're saying at the outset of the hearing before the magistrate judge specifically referred to faith as being at issue.
Well, the magistrate judge did not specifically use the words bad faith, but specifically, let me clarify. The magistrate judge said, I think there is sanctionable conduct here.
Well, yeah, but I mean that's the whole point, I guess, because you know Rule 37 provides for sanctions too, but it doesn't require any finding of intent. And the magistrate judge in the R&R specifically referred to Rule 37, not to anything other than Mark, I guess.
Correct, and I guess where I would refer the court back to is the actual facts of the Toombs case. In that case, a party showed up on the day of trial with a late trial brief and a bunch of exhibits, and the trial judge said, "I'm going to entertain a motion to strike this trial judge and to not allow these strike this trial brief and to not allow these exhibits." And so the counsel made the argument, "Well, look, we submitted this in good faith. We wanted to be thorough in what we provided to this court." And the trial judge then said, okay, I don't believe it, I'm striking it, and I'm awarding sanctions under the inherent power of the court. And the Ninth Circuit in Toombs said, that's okay, because they knew the conduct that was at issue. The conduct was they filed a late trial brief and they had late exhibits. And so therefore they had a chance to defend that conduct. And so the fact that the trial judge didn't even give him a warning, I'm thinking about sanctioning you, it still satisfied the very low bar for due process. And so I think this case is controlled by Toombs, and I would strongly encourage the court to follow the rules set forth in Toombs, what the standard is, whether or not they have a sufficient opportunity to demonstrate that their conduct was not undertaken recklessly or willfully. They had that opportunity here on multiple occasions. All of the misconduct for which the sanctions were awarded was listed out in the magistrate judge's report, and they had a chance to file objections to that report. It was considered, and it was rejected by the district court, who said, not only do I agree with all that bad faith conduct, but I found even more bad faith conduct in your actions before me. And so I think that is sufficient in terms of notice and opportunity to be heard under the controlling decision Toombs. And that's how I would respond to that concern by Your Honor. And I see I've run out of time. Unless there are further questions, I will submit.
All right. Thank you, counsel. Mr. Stillman.
Thank you. I think with all due respect to opposing counsel, it's just a misreading of, the law on the issue of sanctions. Inherent power sanctions are something that, that need to be especially carefully applied, and the party that's potentially being sanctioned needs to know not only what the sanctionable conduct is, but what the what the operative sanctionable authority is. You know, is it Rule 11? Is it Rule 37? Is it inherent powers? Is it Section 1927? Counsel refers to reckless conduct. That is not and never has been sufficient to show actual bad faith under the inherent powers. And so I think the sanctions issue is just plainly wrong. And it's not enough to know that, oh, one of the judges, the magistrate didn't like this conduct. It's got to show, and the party has to be aware of, I'm considering sanctions, whether in order to show cause for a specific, under a specific standard that we can then argue that whatever happened in the court didn't meet. And the Toombs standard is not correct and not applicable in this case because it was a violation of the court's scheduling order at the time of trial. That's a completely different situation from what we have here, which is a literally a motion hearing and a procedure dealing with motions. And I'll only note that Mr. Hoffman is 6'2", 75 years old, and weighs about 250 pounds. And so, and one of the reasons that we said that the subpoena was invalid was that it wasn't served on him, and that's why. And so, it doesn't even describe Mr. Hoffman correctly. But the court doesn't even need to go there, because had Arrowhead not thought that subpoena was invalidated by the Southern District Court's order saying, hey, you have to get approval prior to serving third-party subpoenas for the collection of debt, he wouldn't have served that second subpoena, which is the same subpoena, virtually the same that he served before. He didn't serve it by any means recognizable. He served it by email. So I think that for those reasons, this is just one. This is one of those hotly fought, disputes that's been going on for a lot of years between Mr. Golden and Arrowhead and Seven Arts Entertainment. Pitch Pro is a third party in this proceeding, and it deserves the protections of the court. And for an overbroad subpoena that wasn't served correctly and wasn't served at all and was served, it's just we are Picture Pro is entitled to that kind of protection. And I think
you're well over your time. So.
Oh, I'm sorry, Your Honor. I kept seeing it go to one. I saw it at 1:30, and I said, "Wow, I get more time than I thought." Sorry about that. I apologize.
Well, no, that's fine. That's fine. But I think we understand your arguments. Yeah. Arrowhead Capital Finance versus Picture Pro will be submitted, and this session of the court is adjourned for this afternoon. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you again, Your Honor, for accommodating my
All rise.
Thank you.